And here I go. It is my pleasure to introduce Joanne Skinner. It was so exciting when she and I connected at an ICF chapter meeting. And the result of it is that Joanne is now in our Advanced Sun program. Hi, everybody. I am recording this so that those who are not here will have an opportunity to be present. Joanne's been coaching since 2009. Next year is her 10th year anniversary. And her specialty is training ADHD coaches. She trains for Jody Sleeper Triplett, whom I have known before ICF even existed, and is a neighbor of mine. And Jody has a school that specializes in training coaches to work with ADHD populations. Joanne is also the mentor for new coaches in that organization. Currently, she coaches college students and adults in this specialty. And I have learned a little bit about what Joanne is going to speak about. And you are in for a treat of learning and wisdom and practical application. With that, my wonderful colleague, Joanne.
Oh, thank you so much, Terry, for that warm welcome. I really appreciate it. I want to welcome everybody. I'm really excited you're here. ADHD is my passion, and I love to share, and I hope that you'll learn a lot today. There's a lot of information out there on ADHD, and I want to make sure that I share all the important information for you. Today I want to cover an overview of ADHD as well as executive functions. And then we're going to talk about why do these clients come to coaching and what are their strengths? And then what are their challenges that they show up with that you might want to look for? The first thing I want to do is ask people what they know about ADHD and executive functions, and if you would like to share.
Don't forget to unmute.
Hi, I'm Kim Pichot. All the men in my family have been diagnosed with ADHD. And what I find is that they have laser focus in some areas and assisting them in that focus brings them out so that their life is under more control for themselves. But I also find an incredible intelligence in that situation or whatever.
Well said, thank you. We're talking here about hyperfocus, that these people can really zoom in and focus. It comes with good and bad. So thank you for sharing that, Kim. That's good stuff. Anyone else? All right. I can share a plethora of knowledge here. I am going to share my overview with you. Bear with me here when I find it. Here we go. Okay. So you can look at it as I speak. So the first thing I want to talk about is the ADHD umbrella. We call it ADHD now rather than the old ADD. And under this ADHD umbrella are two types of ADHD, as well as a third combined type where people have attributes of both types. So ADHD with the H, that's the hyperactive kind. When we think about people who are squirming and fidgeting and playing with their pens, anything. You think of little boys running around inappropriately in classrooms. Well, what's interesting about that is by the time somebody gets to be 15, 16 or so, they tend not to be running around as much. We don't think of adults as jumping around or, you know, doing crazy things. It's more of an internal restlessness. So that hyperactivity goes inside and our brains are working all the time with tons of information, all sorts of distractions coming in. And as Kim said, that information can be like super interesting, but it can get in the way. These people that are hyperactive tend to talk a lot. You know, we've all been to meetings where somebody is talking, or they're blurting out answers. People with the hyperactive type ADHD can be impulsive, where they have trouble inhibiting behaviors. So we think about people that can't handle a budget or, you know, buying a new pair of black shoes when you come home and you have a closet full of black shoes. Not really thinking about that. Interrupting a lot. I remember when I was little, my dad would say, "Joanne, don't interrupt." Well, when people interrupt, it's because they have something that they feel is very important. They might not think of the perspective of others when they're interrupting, or they might have this great idea that they're just afraid that they'll forget. So they have to say it right away. And then there is emotional dysregulation. And that's the area where people are extremely sensitive, can't necessarily manage their emotions, don't take criticism well, or get angry real easily. So this is the hyperactive piece. The next piece is primarily inattentive. That's where we think of the old-fashioned ADD. I'll have moms call and say, "My son has been diagnosed with ADD." And I'll always say, primarily inattentive. So what do you think of when I say primarily inattentive? Somebody that has a hard time focusing. So that focus piece is key in this area. So what happens when you can't focus? Well, you might make a lot of mistakes, careless errors. You might not like details. As I said, it's difficult with holding on to attention or focus. They may not seem to be listening when you speak to them directly. They have poor ability to follow through on tasks. So here's a big one that you might notice in coaching. These people come and say, "I never finish anything. I just want to get it done." They often avoid or procrastinate, especially when something's really dull or boring, or they have to use a lot of mental effort. They often have trouble organizing tasks or even in how they operate internally. They're easily distracted, as I said, and they're very forgetful. Think about somebody who loses their iPhone all the time. That can get really expensive. Or losing their keys, it's like, oh my gosh, here I am in the middle of nowhere and I don't have my keys, I have no idea where they are. So this could be really tough. And as I said before, the combined type, that's what most people have. a little bit of those symptoms from both sides. The symptoms that I just gave you come from the DSM-5, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. So they are the real symptoms. In order for somebody to get diagnosed, here's the interesting thing. In order to get diagnosed when you're a kid, you have to have 6 of those symptoms. As adults, you only need 5. But those 5 symptoms have to really get in the way of your life. It's not like, oh gosh, I forgot to empty the dishwasher. I hate emptying the dishwasher. Oh, that's not ADHD. Granted, people with ADHD can hate emptying the dishwasher and forget about it, but it's really not like walking away and leaving it half empty. So what else do you need to get diagnosed? You have to have symptoms since childhood. And that can be kind of tough for adults because maybe they don't remember when they were really young. But I think a lot of us can remember back to high school and where some subjects might be tough. The symptoms have to be in more than one setting. Can't just be in school. It has to be at work, has to be at home, it has to be impairing your entire life, including socially. And here's an interesting one, I think. These symptoms can't be explained by something else, like a concussion or PTSD. And what Kathy said before a lot of you jumped on, the symptoms are on a continuum, so they can be different in everyone. So just because, you know, I can't remember stuff and lose my keys all the time, Sharon might be somebody that's interrupting, which I know she doesn't interrupt, but, you know, so we're different. And remember, you only have to have 5 of the symptoms. So what else is interesting, or what I find interesting, is that it's a neurobiological disorder. So it's really how your brain works. It is not because, you know, you have a bad mother. Granted, people with ADHD function better when they don't eat a lot of sugar and when they exercise, but I think that's true across the board. And ADHD is highly genetic. If a parent has it, you have, if both parents have it, you have over a 50% chance of your child having it. But a lot of adults right now are getting diagnosed because their children are getting diagnosed. So, you know, I'll have moms call in and say, you know, I act just like my son. You know, I can see that I might have this condition too. So it runs in families. And with ADHD comes comorbid issues. And when I say comorbid, those are some challenges that come along with it. So people with ADHD often have anxiety. They can have depression. A lot of them have learning disabilities. Not everybody can be brilliant and have ADHD, but learning disabilities. And substance abuse issues. I do want to share with you that I was thinking back. In December, I had 6 adults that were clients. 4 of them were in recovery. Either from they were in AA or they had been substance abusers. So it happens. So that's a real downside. Any questions around ADHD before I move over to the executive functioning piece? Ooh, That means I did a really good job. If you think of any questions, ask me. I'm always happy to answer. So, you know, those are the main things with ADHD. However, when one is diagnosed with ADHD, they normally come with issues with executive functions. Anybody know about executive functions? It's kind of a big buzzword these days, especially around academics.
No, please explain.
Great. Okay, I'm going to explain. Executive functions are the management system of your brain. It's kind of like your brain's CEO. And executive functions normally take place in your prefrontal cortex, which is up here, right? So it's a bunch of activities that are task-oriented that help you get things done. And I like to look at Dr. Tom Brown's model for executive functioning. Tom Brown is a psychologist that has been at Yale for years, and he just moved out to University of Southern California. But he does a lot of research around executive functions. And the other person that I like to rely on a lot that's interesting to Google would be Russell Barkley. He's a clinical professor at University of South Carolina and is actually now doing some stuff at VCU, which is in Richmond, close to Kathy. He came out of Massachusetts General, all those guys up there. He says that the executive functions are about self-regulation and self-management. So think of all the things that you have to do to manage your brain, and if you have, or manage your day, and if you have problems with executive function, it's going to be really hard for you to regulate yourself to get the results that you need. Barkley says that it's a problem of performance, not knowledge or skill. So once again, you can be the most brilliant person in the world and still have problems getting stuff done. And it's not willful. Nobody sets themselves up as a kid to be lazy. So that's one of those words that I hate when students come and say, oh, I'm just lazy. I don't do stuff. It's like, nobody wants to be lazy. Nobody wants that label. So let's talk about what the executive functions are. First of all, the first cluster that Brown talks about is activation. And that includes organization, planning, prioritization, and initiation. So organization, think about it. It's the ability to create a system and maintain that system to keep track of your information and your important stuff. And that means both externally and internally. So we think about organization, that person in your office that has like mounds of paper all over their desk. You know, how do they find stuff? Or even on their computer, if you don't have an organizational system and you just save stuff, where is it? Same thing of like, if you go to find information in your brain and you don't have a place to store it, it's going to take you a while to find it. And think of the anxiety that that can create for somebody. Oh my God, I know I have it here on my desk somewhere, but I have so much paper. And you're like, right? So, whew, anxiety.
Joanne?
Yes.
Excuse me. Could you title that first executive function? I missed that.
I call it activation.
Thank you.
And actually, Tom Brown calls it activation. So organization. Then the second thing is around planning and prioritization. So what do you need to accomplish a goal? Well, you have to anticipate the future. you have to set goals, and you have to develop steps to carry out that task. Well, if you don't think about making a plan before you set up your task, think what's going to happen. You know, I have students that come and it's like, what's your plan for this week to get, you know, your essay written? And in the meantime, do all that reading. It's like, oh, I don't know. Or even something fun. You're planning your vacation and you know you're going to Disney World and you're taking the kids. Well, what do you need to do to plan it out? It's not just showing up at the airport. Yeah, think of all the steps. And if you have challenges around that, man, you're going to really be disappointing those kids. So, and then along with that, think about prioritization. What's really important? If you have a to-do list that's 3 pages long, how the heck do you know what's important or even where to start if you have no way to prioritize? You know, think of a working mom. You know, how does she prioritize when she comes home from work with kids and a partner and, you know, eating and going to meetings? You know, where do I start if I don't know how to prioritize? And then comes initiation. So that's the part where it's hard to start a project, especially if it's boring. If it's not interesting or novel, some brains just don't want to start. It's like really important, even if it's an important task. And I think that's where that label lazy comes in. Of, you know, somebody who's sitting there watching TV when they know that they should be working on a presentation or cleaning the house or whatever it is. And what happens a lot is these people tend to procrastinate to the last minute. And then we know what happens when you procrastinate. There's a lot of anxiety and you're probably not doing your best work. And if you're a student, you know, if you're procrastinating on that paper, well, goodness, if you pull the all-nighter, it's not going to be that good. Or if you wait to study, you know, how do you get that info in your brain? So procrastination and often avoidance. You know, you just think, why would you avoid this? You know you had to do it. So remember, they don't necessarily know how. They know they're supposed to be doing it. They don't know how to do it. So that's the first cluster. Then comes focus. So you're going to see how these executive functions really overlap and work with the ADHD mind and how all of these executive functions have to work together in order for somebody to be successful and get the results they want. So what's focus? Well, we have to be able to sustain attention, and then we have to be able to shift the attention when needed. So, you know, sustaining attention, it's to be focused despite distractions, or if you're tired, you know, those distractions could be, oh my gosh, there's a squirrel out there. Heck. Or it could be some information popping into your brain like, oh my gosh, what am I having for dinner tonight? I know I'm sitting here listening to this person talk, but I gotta focus. So, you know, things popping up in your mind. And then there's the shifting. And this is where Kim was talking about the hyper-focus. Remember she said the men in her family have this ability to like lock in on stuff and that helps them. But if you are hyper-focused and can't pull away, what's going to happen? I think about kids with video games. You know, if they don't pull themselves away, if they're away at school, it's like, oh, what'd you do this weekend, client? Oh, well, I just played video games the whole time. You know, somebody's not there to say, how about some homework? You can forget to shift. And it also can happen, let's say, in the office. When you're working on, let's say you're working on a proposal and you go to lunch and you come back, it can be really hard to just transition back. Next cluster is effort, and that's regulating alertness. So that kind of fits real well with the focus. How do I regulate and sit quietly rather than moving all around and just maintain and listen? An interesting fact is many people with ADHD have trouble with sleep. They have trouble falling asleep and may not get to sleep till very late, and that gives them a problem of waking up in the morning. So their clock could be off. Then processing speed is the next, and that's where people with ADHD can be slow to process information. They may not come up with an answer right away. They may have to learn to say, what do you think about that? And get back to you. And when we think about kids in school that might have an IEP or a 504 plan to support their academics, if they have extended time on tests, it's very often because their processing speed is slower. So it takes them longer to get the information into their brain and then to retrieve that information and get it down for tests or reading, anything like that. So ADHD clients may be just kind of slower to get it in. But once in a while, but also once it's in there, it's really in there. So brilliant people can have processing speed issues. Emotions is a big one. We talked about that before with people with ADHD. They may feel their emotions more intensely. They might have trouble managing their frustrations and emotions. And remember, ADHD is not a mood disorder. It is just people having a hard time managing their emotions. So clients could be very sensitive when it comes to giving feedback. Criticism can be really hard. And, you know, if they get teased, it could be just so sad for them. They take it really personally. You know, that toughen up, well, might not work with these people. And next is time management. Barclay likes to call it time blindness. It's the ability to estimate how long something takes and how to stay within time limits and maybe even to estimate how much time one has. So, you know, I'm looking at the clock now. I'm trying to register, you know, how to stay within my time frame to do this presentation. People with time blindness might not even think of that. They're the ones that are chronically late, and it can cause a lot of anxiety. So you can see where I was saying before that comorbid issues, anxiety is a big one, because if you can't do this stuff, oh my goodness, just think about how people feel when they aren't living up to their own expectations or the expectations of others, especially when they are really smart. Working memory can be a tough thing for people with ADHD, and that's around memory and recall. So working memory, I don't expect you to know this, but it's our cognitive horsepower. It's about when we take in information, that how we hold it in our brains and not let it disappear while we go to do something else. So many of you are taking notes, and that will help you to keep information from this presentation from disappearing. But an example might be a young person, a student in a math class that's sitting in math and listening to the teacher talk about all the steps in the problem and sitting there and saying, I get this, I get it, taking some notes, and then going home to do the homework and thinking, I have no idea. I knew it in class and I can't do this homework now. And if they are tenacious, they'll sit there and try to refigure it out. It's almost like reteaching themselves. But if they're not, they might say, I'll just do this homework in class tomorrow. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that maybe they're not going to be really good at math, but they have the aptitude. So multi-step directions can be hard. So, you know, it's about keeping all that in mind. And once again, you can be brilliant and have problems with this, and it's just how to figure out a way to learn best, to keep it in there. So what's important to remember about executive functions? If anything, I would say it's about self-regulation. It's about monitoring oneself so that they can regulate their behavior. And that means regulate thoughts and actions. So those are the executive functions. And there's a woman up at Kennedy Krieger. Her name is Martha Denkla, who is really a really good presenter. She's director of developmental cognitive neurology up there. And she gives the metaphor of, imagine the cupboards in your kitchen are full, but you can't make dinner because you don't have the recipe. I love that metaphor because you have everything that's needed. It's all there, but you don't know how to coordinate it. You didn't come with directions. So people with these challenges need to learn structure and strategy, and they need the tools to help them. And then they can manage. Most of them can. Sometimes if you're on the continuum that is, you have a lot of challenges, it can be hard. So it's initiating tasks, sustaining energy throughout the task, inhibiting distractions, and shifting from one task to the next. ISIS. So, any questions around executive functions? I've hit you with a lot. ADHD is very complicated. Yes, Terry.
Does our well-being game fit into the executive function part or something else?
You know, I've been thinking a lot about this, and Karen and I have even talked about it, and I think that it can be helpful. And even the results game and guidelines for living are really helpful, because when people with ADHD, they're all about doing. I have to do it, do it, do it. Help me do it. But what about the awareness piece? So the coaching, the way we can coach is first around awareness before we work on engagement. And that awareness would include well-being, because if we, you know, what's getting in the way of our well-being? What do we need to be aware of? What helps us there? What supports us? Is that helpful?
I have found, I'll put it that way, I have found that people with the symptoms of ADHD at the beginning report very low, that's a judgment, let me say, ones, twos, and threes of well-being scores on the game. They might move a little bit through the five-month coaching. Would that be typical?
I think so. You know, how do people tend to show up when they first come to coaching? Well, on the good side, they want to thrive. They want to live up to their potential. They want to achieve results. They want to improve their performance. They want order and balance and well-being. They tend to want a sense of urgency. I got to do it now. Mm-hmm. So there's this rush to teach me how to do this. You know, I need this. I want this. But it's really, let's take a deep breath and really think it through. And that's where learning about well-being can really support people with ADHD. Think about, you know, we talked a little bit about how anxiety shows up. Well, there's self-talk, you know, that ability that's, you know, talking in your head, this unconscious self-talk can be terribly negative. Just think about it. If you're always feeling like you're screwing up, you know, what are they saying to themselves? What, you know, as Vicky Escudé said, what are their beliefs? And their beliefs, I mean, they could be like, I'm incompetent. I'm disorganized. I'm just overwhelmed all the time. And it's just this automatic reflex of, oh, go to the negative. So we have to talk about that awareness. Like, if something, you know, what do you say to yourself when, you know, you miss the deadline? Right? And, oh my gosh, you can say, well, I'm afraid I'm going to be fired. Well, what does that mean? There's a lot of digging and uncovering around those thoughts and feelings. We have to be careful, you know, not to do that a therapeutic model. So we are talking about awareness and what do you notice, not how do you feel. They tend not to even always think about these things because they're so busy trying to get stuff done, or that spinning, I should be doing, mm-hmm. I need. So a lot of times when they come, to coaching. They are, very low on that spectrum, Jerry, of well-being. Because they know that there's a better way, and they just don't know how to do that. Just like people, you know, some of the strengths of people with ADHD are they can be really creative. But just think if you have all these super duper great ideas and you never follow through on any of them. And in the business world, when your friends are being successful and you're kind of like not getting stuff done. And then, you know, the sensitivity on top of that. But they can be, you know, passionate and funny and curious and great at trivia. So with, it's kind of like the shadow of, hey, if I'm a really caring person, that's a strength. But if I overplay the caring, oof. And so you can look at it that way too. Any more questions? Well, I'd like to ask a question back to you. And that would be, and I'm truly curious about this. I think about it a lot, is...
There was a question.
Oh, there's a question. Is that Sharon?
Jerry.
No?
It's me. It's Jerry.
Hi.
Hi, everybody. Because what Terry said about well-being made me think about what we are talking about, what I have listened, and hyperactive is everything about doing.
It's yes.
The process.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is for Terry, maybe, is like moving the attention of these people from the doing to the being?
I appreciate that question because that's the one I was going to ask back to all of you. So who would like to talk about that? I think... we were focusing on you, Terry.
Well, since I do that with almost anyone, whether they have symptoms of ADHD or not, I would say yes. Going back to what Joanne said in terms of awareness, purpose of coaching is to increase client awareness. Awareness of what? Well, I wonder if the well-being, if we focus a lot on well-being, that doesn't sound like it'll necessarily change the executive function. There's still a neurotransmitter missing up there. Whether well-being... okay, I'm confused.
Yeah, and that's why it's really hard. So... often, and it depends on, obviously, the challenges that the person brings to the table. And like I said, they often want to just get something done. It's like, you know, I just want a plan. I just want a plan for the week. And if I have the plan, then the week is going to be great. Well, how true is that? How do we know that? So sometimes it is about listening to, okay, client, you want to develop a plan. What's important about the plan? How is life going to change with the plan? And let's do it, right? We can take the action steps. Let's put the plan together. What's important, though, then, is when the client comes back the next week, there has to be some kind of accountability around, tell me about that plan. And what did you notice about the plan? Because the whole piece about action steps is about learning. So what did you learn from this? I always say, if you do it, You follow through on your plan? That's fabulous. That's really good. But how do you make planning or whatever a habit so it continues, right? So what did you notice that was easy or hard? If they didn't get it done, I always say, because they come with like, oh my God, I failed again. I just couldn't get it done. I'm just, you know, and come up with excuses or whatever. It's like, okay. First of all, I'm really glad that you shared with me, because a lot of times, remember, they learned avoidance. I'm really glad you shared with me. And I'm really curious, what got in the way of the plan? What did we learn? So learning, because what they found out is these people don't always learn from the past. We hear about people with multiple bankruptcies. It's like, didn't you learn the first time? I mean, that's like horrible. No, because maybe they don't know how to plan, or they don't know how to budget. There's all of these, there can be a bunch of underlying issues that we really have to help figure out. So it's about the learning. But one of my colleagues who I actually did mentoring with, Cameron Gott, who's in Charlottesville, he's a fabulous coach and works primarily with people with ADHD and organizers. They do a coach approach for organizers, and they work with, and a lot of organizers work with people with ADHD, so it's a really good system. He has a model called the AEC model: awareness, engagement, and then completion. And the completion is the very last. We don't even worry about the completion piece. It's about the awareness. What's going on here? What are the thoughts? And before you move on to the action steps and engagement, we got to kind of have to think through this through. Remember, like, planning, it doesn't come naturally. Like, gosh, really? I have to set up steps? So it can take a long time and to support these people, and it can be frustrating because sometimes for them, they're like, I want it now. We want it now.
And Ron has a question?
Yes.
Or comment?
Yeah, I'm not seeing the questions, so if you would be... Yeah.
I have two questions, actually. One of them is, what do you recommend of time frames of meeting them? Is it every week, or...
Yes.
Because I think the frequency has to be higher.
Yes, every week, and at the same time every week. Mm-hmm. And I also offer them any check-ins during the week to say, hey, I completed, you know, I had one lady that wanted to make an appointment to call the cardiologist. Hey, I called the cardiologist. Great. And, you know, so the accountability is really important. So.
And what is your recommendation for someone who really wants to work with people who has ADHD and stuff? Because this is very valuable, what you're giving us, but it's also mapping the gaps that we have. Because we have to know, I think you have to know to work with the learning strategies and stuff like, you know a bit more about them and encompass it into your coaching. Otherwise, you'll be like a bit the blind leading the blind.
Absolutely. That's a really good point. Well, I work with Jody Sleeper Triplett. She does like weekend long events. She works mostly with students, coaches that want to work with students. There is an organization called CHADD that has a lot of information, CHADD. There is also the Association of ADHD Coaching Organization, ACO, that has a lot of information. So there's good stuff out there.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking.
Joanne, this is Guillermo. I have a question.
Yes, Guillermo.
So it sounds like coaching definitely can help folks with ADHD. I wonder what other avenues of help do folks who have ADHD or symptoms of it, what do they have, and how does coaching fit in, and, you know, with the rest of those avenues of help?
Yeah, thank you for that question. It's a good one. We tend to look at a multimodal approach, and coaching often goes along with therapy, and many people with ADHD go to a psychiatrist for their medications. So I always have my clients sign a release so that I can talk with the other people in their lives. So, you know, this morning I had a conversation with somebody's therapist just to make sure we're on the same line. CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, is helpful because it helps, you know, one step how to do stuff. That's really a good way to do it. Yeah, and I think coaching is a great way to do it. And research, they're doing more and more research on ADHD coaching, and it's showing that there is a real help for it, especially with students. It's fabulous to be able to get a younger student to show them strategies and how to do things before they go away to college and, you know, fail, for lack of a better term, because a lot of times the parents are their external executive function.
Right.
You know, did you do your homework? It's time to go to bed. And then they send their kids off to college and there's no support there anymore. So the kids are like, hey, let's party. And, you know, not even knowing that how to study, things like that. So a lot of schools now are incorporating coaching. There's also the learning center, and a lot of these kids are embarrassed. They don't want to go to the learning center. So I always like normalize it. It's like, hey, you know, you're paying for, your mom and dad are paying for this. This just is an extra gift. So to normalize this, you know, a lot of times people go through this, and sometimes people with ADHD think they're all alone.
I don't know how is it in the United States, but in Israel I know that occupational therapists who are specializing in learning disorders and stuff like that, they're working with them about learning strategies, and this is very helpful. And then you can incorporate coaching in that. So
that's right.
The supplementing is very good.
Yes, thank you for adding that. So it can be tough, but when you get a client, just like a typically developing client that you all have, that really want to make changes in their life and are open to it, it's just a wonderful thing. You know, it just lights up your world. And to support families, because a lot of times when parents take their kids in to the doctors to say, hey, the teacher noticed that this is going on. My kid is brilliant, but they don't hand their homework in. That tends to happen. My kid is brilliant, but it doesn't do his homework. I don't understand. And the doctors don't understand ADHD, and because it's a full-time job, really, to understand it. There's so much information coming out and so much more research. They didn't start to research women with ADHD until 1996. Before, it was just like, oh, he's a boy, he's jumping off, you know, the table, or can't sit still, he's running around the back of the classroom. Let's just medicate him. Well, you know, now they're understanding that there's a whole lot more to it than somebody who doesn't focus and somebody who is hyperactive. So it's kind of like that's the tip of the iceberg. What's going on underneath when with frustrations and anxiety and no well-being. And just to have somebody that listens and asks powerful questions, it can be such a gift. Oh, Terry.
How does our life purpose fit into the picture?
Ah, I love that question. I think life purpose creates an awareness to always come back to. And if you're having a bad day, and it's true for anyone, and life purpose fits into everybody's life, not just people with ADHD, because we coach the person, not the ADHD, right? So a person with ADHD is going to use life purpose just like anyone else. Okay. So,
I asked because years ago someone suggested to pick some object that meant something to the person, a common object, I mean, or anything. It could be the color blue of the sky
or
a doorknob or something like that. And weave that into the reminder system to go back to it.
Mm-hmm. It's a strategy.
A strategy.
And that's the thing with coaching. We ask a lot of questions so that maybe the person said, you know what, I need a reminder. Well, what kind of reminder do you need? You know, what? So if they are up for it, then that's when we can talk about it. One of the differences, I think, with ADHD coaching is that we are we're supportive, but sometimes have to dole out information. You know, may I share with you what some of the strategies that some of my other clients use, right? They might, you know, if they can't manage their time, we might talk about setting alarms, you know, your phone, have your phone go off at a certain time to remind you to do something, you know, take your medication or what have you. So there's a little bit more hand-holding. But we have to remember what the ICF says, that our clients are naturally creative, resourceful, and whole, as are people with ADHD. So they come to us with the same wants and needs, and they want the same results as everybody else.
Thank you.
Just about out of time, so.
Thank you so much, Joanne. I'm sad to say our time is up. And if there are questions, may people contact you directly?
Absolutely. Please contact me. Even if you just want to have a conversation more about, how do I learn more? It's my passion. I love it. It's really about supporting people.
And
so, thank you for this opportunity.
What would be the email address that you would want them to use?
Let's see. Can I put it?
You can put it in the chat.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Please.
And while she's doing that, just a reminder to everyone that if you register.